Good morning and welcome to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and today we're speaking with Stephanie Small from the Porcupine's Quill Press. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, Christine.
So just before we came on the air, Stephanie, I asked you if you actually have a title. And you know what? We're just going to get started there because your answer was...
My answer was not particularly. I've been called everything. I've been intern. I've been marketing manager. I've been editor. I like to call myself the girl of all work because really I do whatever needs doing that's within my skill set. Mostly that means marketing tasks, so like social media, email newsletters, event planning. But as I mentioned, I also do some editing, some typesetting, grant writing, and so on.
And you even sometimes go through that slush pile and whittle it down.
Oh, yes, of course. That's always a fun task to read through those unsolicited manuscripts and see what's new and exciting in my inbox.
Yeah, in our earlier conversations, part of your engagement, you've said, is the fact that you get to do all these things. And that's because the Porcupine's Quill is a small house. So tell us kind of what does that exactly mean that it's a small house? It's a small publishing house.
Really what that means is it's all hands on deck at all times. So there's a lot more variety in the tasks that each of us who is working there has to take on. I think the best part about working for a small press is that very quickly you're given a lot of new challenges and a lot of different aspects of the publishing process to experience. So I myself love that I'm given a ton of freedom in terms of what I want to take on, whether I want to work on the website one day or whether I want to go to a specific event or plan a new thing. It's a lot of trust that I've been given,
yeah.
And I think that that makes people who work for small presses work all the harder.
And, you know, you've been with the Porcupine's Quill for a few years, but before that, you did do an internship at one of the big four, shall we say, a major press. And so you do have something to compare. What were some of the comparables that you were able to make between a major house and the Porcupine's Quill?
Well, a lot of that has to do, obviously, with scale. We see a lot fewer books going that we go through every season compared to one of the big multinationals. But I think in terms of work environment, it's a lot more meetings. It's a lot more, I don't want to say busy work, but there are tasks that are very repetitive and that seem to be not very big picture. And those are the things that when you're just starting out at a big house, you tend to be tasked with. When you're working for a smaller press, very quickly you're given more responsibility. Every task that you take on really, really matters, and you see immediately the impact that it can have not only on your marketing and promotional efforts for that season, but also in sort of shaping and determining what the press looks like as a company, as a brand.
Yeah. And so if you're with a larger press, if I can just sort of whittle that down to with a larger press, you're doing a whole lot of prep work. And with a smaller press, because there's fewer people to do a whole lot of tasks, you're actually in there doing. You're up to your elbows in the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it depends on, you know, how much seniority you have and what your job description is. But I find that especially when you're just starting out, it is a lot of that administrative, you know, doing audits and reports and sitting in on meetings and things like that.
Yeah. One of the things that attracted me to the Porcupine's Quill is the newsletter you write. And I read it for, I guess, a couple of years. And I finally got in touch with you because I was just so delighted by the your style and the of course the books that you brought forward. But I got such a feel for the Porcupine's Quill through the newsletter. And that is something that you've been able to kind of make your own a little bit, even though it existed before. So tell us a little bit about the newsletter.
Well, first of all, thank you. Very kind words. The newsletter sort of grew out of, I hate to say it, but some legislation that the Canadian government passed a couple years ago,
uh-huh.
The Canadian anti-spam law, and it really changed how we could interact with our customers online through email. So we really had to kind of sit down and rethink how we wanted to talk to people that we already had some kind of a business relationship. So what we came up with is this email, and some of it was obviously instinct and what I like to see in an email. Some of it was research into best practices and what it means to put out an email newsletter, and some of it was just helpful notes from, you know, staff at Porcupine's Quill. Some of our subscribers also, kind of as we were going along, gave us some suggestions and things that they'd like to see. And I think one of the major kind of points of clarity for me kind of grew out of one of these subscriber comments. It was kind of a really inspiring woman in Canadian publishing wrote to me, and she had like a really nice little note that kind of told me how much she enjoyed the newsletter. And she said to me that, you know, you really ought to identify the person who's writing this. Because a lot of times I share little personal anecdotes or things that I like, and it tends to be a lot more identified with me and what I want to talk about. So what we ended up doing is we took that particular suggestion, and Tim, our publisher, had commissioned a portrait of my face by this really, really cool artist named Leslie Bates. So it's kind of like that National Post vignette, author vignette style. And I put that on the bottom of all of my blog posts and all of my newsletters to kind of say, hey, this is not just some faceless corporate newsletter you're getting. Everything that is written here is something that I've thought about and wanted to share with you, and I want to hear back from you. So it's more of a conversation starter than just a blast of information.
And you call yourself a porcupette? Or is
so
it
that
the?
That predates me. A porcupette is sort of the word for baby porcupine. So in previous incarnations of my job, I mean, I started at the Porcupine's Quill as an intern, so there's always been the porcupette as being kind of the in-training person at the company. And I've just never relinquished that title, even though I've been there for 5 years and have kind of gone beyond the role of intern.
I like porcupine in training. I like that. I would like to be a porcupette. You know, you guys really always sound like you're having fun whenever I talk to you, or, you know, I've talked to Tim, and you just sound like you're having fun there. You're, you know, you really engage with your authors. And of course, your authors just love you. The Porcupine's Quill is just so up there in terms of the feedback that I hear from your authors. I think part of that, and obviously, is because they get to be so involved in everything. So tell us a little bit how that is changed with a small press, you know, how involved authors are with the production of their own books.
Well, I think for us anyway, we really are passionate about books. So we don't choose any books that we don't like, which helps a lot when it comes to interacting with the authors, because obviously we're already all fans. And you work a little bit harder when you're a big fan of the book. But I think from the author's perspective, we give a lot of opportunity for them to have input in the way that their book is made. So we don't just listen to their comments during the editorial process. We also want them to have a say in, you know, what their cover design looks like, which is not very common among publishing companies. We want them to have a chance at every step of the way to approve, for example, the back cover copy or anything that we share on the website. We'll run it by them first. We feel that the authors really have they're a great resource, and they know who their existing fans are. They know how best to reach them. So it would be silly of us not to give them a little bit of power in that whole author and publisher relationship.
And because you can be so personal, and it's not a case of getting through, you know, three people to get to your desk, you get to have the hands-on, one-on-one contact with your authors. And of course, all of them that I have talked to have said how thrilled they are with the beautiful, beautiful books that you turn out at the Porcupine's Quill.
Yeah, I think we are pretty proud of our production values. Over at the shop, Tim and Elka do some really, really fantastic work in making books that are beautiful and they last a long time. And I think that helps us in some ways to attract authors, particularly those who are artists as well. A lot of our books
yes.
have some kind of intersection with the visual arts, whether it be drawings or especially wood engravings, paintings, things like that. These are people who recognize that what we do is somewhat unique in Canadian publishing in the sort of handmade approach that we take to our production, but it's also kind of our calling card, and it's what makes us, it's part of our mandate at the press.
Yes, and you know, we're going to talk some more about exactly that. I'm so fascinated by your wordless novels and how beautiful they are. We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsor, Stephanie, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about wordless novels that are produced by the Porcupine's Quill. You're listening to Storylines. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with Stephanie Small from the Porcupine's Quill. Welcome back to Storylines on the Bay, 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and our guest today is Stephanie Small from the Porcupine's Quill. Stephanie, before the break, we just touched on the wordless novels. And of course, we were talking about how beautiful the books are. And part of your mandate is to create books that are heavy on the illustration side. Tell us a little bit about your wordless novel series.
The wordless novel series is, it kind of grows out of this older tradition of graphic novels before comic books and before
right.
the kind of literary graphic novels that we know today.
Mm-hmm.
The wordless novels that we do are based on wood engravings. So there's a very heavy art component already, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of expertise, and a lot of artistic know-how to put together collections of 80-plus wood engravings. So our wordless novels are basically really reasonably priced trade editions of what would be very, very expensive
right.
limited edition artist books. And what they do is they tell a story entirely in pictures. So we don't have the captions explaining what's going on in the storyline. We just have these very powerful, very beautiful wood engravings that put together tell this narrative.
And the great thing about these novels is that the reader has to interpret the image. And there is a story arc, there is a plot line, but you don't need to speak English to read them. You can learn about Canadian culture because so many of them are, the Canadian culture is central to the theme of the stories. And you can learn as a new Canadian, you can learn important things about Canadian culture, which is what I find, you know, partly is so amazing about the Porcupine's Quill, what you put out there.
In some small way, you can maybe glean a little bit about Canadian history, culture, through the more biographical wordless novels. So, for example, George A. Walker has several visual biographies of people like Leonard Cohen, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Tom Thompson.
Right.
So maybe by getting a sense of the sorts of imagery and the sorts of public figures that are important in our society, it can tell you a little bit about our culture in general. But I think to a larger extent, the benefit of these wordless novels is about lowering barriers to understanding. So as you mentioned, if you don't speak English, you can still enjoy the story.
Mm-hmm.
If you are maybe have problems with literacy or with reading comprehension, you can still engage and talk about the story. So it's all about starting conversations, about allowing interpretations, and really not privileging one specific language or method of learning and communication.
Yeah. Now, one of the other things that I think PQL is known for and has made a reputation on is the fact that you really work at preserving Canadian literature. And part of that is your huge selection of poetry books. And you, I think, were first attracted to PQL with working on the PK Page series. Is that right? Do I remember that right?
Yes, that's right. I did did my master's degree at Trent University, and one of the major kind of people to study at Trent in the English department is P.K. Page. A lot of her literary papers are there. Her literary executor was working there at the time. So if you go to Trent, you've heard of Page and you're well familiar with her work.
But it's not just the greats that you publish, you know, world-renowned poets. You also publish a lot of mid-career poets who maybe haven't broken through yet. And I know that it's one of Tim and Elka's specialties to work with people who haven't made a name yet, but they go on to make a big name in Canadian literature or poetry.
Yes, I mean, part of what we do is we try to bring back maybe voices that were on the brink of being forgotten. So one of the ways that we do that is through the Essential Poets series, which is sort of gaining a little bit of traction nowadays. We're up to our 16th volume right now with the Essential John Rabutins. And the intent of this whole series is to reprint the most essential, the very best or most in need of study, in terms of poets and the poems that they've written over the course of sometimes a very long career, mm-hmm. and just bring them back into the public eye and give not only poetry lovers, but students and teachers another chance to go back and appreciate exactly what it was that those authors were doing. And in some cases, the authors are still alive and writing. In other cases, these are authors who have passed away and just never really got that sort of critical appreciation that we might have hoped.
Also, what's happening today may be based on a lot of the work of previous poets who, as you say, have maybe faded from public view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, poetry never exists in a vacuum, and every modern poet nowadays has a lot to thank the previous poets who came before for creating a certain aesthetic or pioneering a certain type of poetry and just lending their influence to the voices of newer poets. So it is important to look back and see what has come before and to kind of consider that in our culture nowadays, it's very much sort of focused on trying to get those new generation poets out there. And that's a very important job, but it's also important to recognize that there are poets out there who are not those, you know, 20-something just out of school poets. They're journeyman poets who are still trying to break out, who are still publishing very profound lyrics in magazines and still trying to get that first collection out there. So we're trying to get people across the spectrum of ages and of experience in publishing and trying to preserve the very best, the ones that we think need a little bit more care and attention.
And what a mandate that is. I mean, that's besides producing beautiful books, you're really caretaking in terms of preserving our Canadian culture, the important things about our Canadian culture.
Well, I think those two aspects are really, they work well together. I mean, if we have a really solidly produced book that doesn't fall apart, you know, when you crack the spine, that's a book that you're going to keep. And if it looks beautiful and if it lasts a long time, then in a way that is preserving that voice for a little bit longer. It's not the type of book that you're just going to toss in the donate bin or get rid of.
Right. So I'm going to ask a very unfair question. I'm going to ask if you can pick a favorite PQL title from this year's books that you've published.
Oh, how dare you, Christine? probably... If I had to pick one, and I mean, they're all my favorites,
yes.
But if I had to pick my favorite child, it would probably be Barbara Sibbald's The Museum of Possibilities.
Good pick.
Published in the spring, the collection of short stories, which is really, really beautiful collection. I think I probably spent the most time really in the manuscript and talking back and forth with Barbara to hone some of the finer points. And I'm really proud of what came out of it. And I think Barbara did a fantastic job and she was wonderful to work with. So
yeah, we had Barbara on the show in March, I guess, just when her book came out. And it is such a pleasure to read. And it's just one of your most beautiful books. It's a pleasure to hold that book. So good pick. I concur.
Thank you.
Your upcoming spring list. What's something really special to look forward to in your upcoming list?
Well, we've got a number of really special ones. One of my favorites is a book of engravings that kind of depict some of the follies and foibles of the English language. So look forward to See What I'm Saying by Jim Westergaard. And another one that it's kind of an unusual title, but I think it's really interesting and it's really going to do something, is Jan in 35 Pieces, which is a creative, really creatively written memoir by Ian Hampton, who is a cellist, used to be a cellist for the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. So he has written a wonderful, wonderful memoir, very creative, about the influence of music on his career and his life.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
So give us your website, Stephanie, so that listeners can go and have a look for themselves at the list of books there.
Absolutely. You can log into our website at porcupinesquill.ca. We have all of our current list up there, as well as ways to sign up for our newsletter, which we talked about. So
yes,
if anyone's interested in doing that, it's very simple on our website.
And it is such a fun newsletter to read. It's one of the very few that still is allowed into my inbox every month, and I look forward to reading it.
All right. Well, I'll have to make the next one a good one for you.
You make them all good, Stephanie. Thanks so much, Stephanie, for joining us this morning to talk about Porcupine's Quill.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, thank you for tuning in this morning to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. Today, we've been speaking with Stephanie Small from the Porcupine's Quill Press. I'm Christine Cowley, and we're here in two new time slots. If you haven't heard, we're now broadcast on Saturday mornings at 8.05 a.m. after the 8 o'clock news, and Wednesday nights at 11 p.m. for you night owls out there. So we will keep on talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Please tune in again.